Coming up on this week's podcast, live from Scotland, it's Neil and the Superfans.
Whoa. What is going on here?
I think you'll find there's been a takeover. The NFU podcast has expanded and has its new site here in Aberdeen, Scotland.
Oh, no, not this again.
That doesn't sound right. Greg, do you know anything about this?
The Redskins Today?
Yeah.
Redskins did you have every anything? Day.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, they make a lot of sense because we add the, what is it now, the 25th name to that jersey?
Whoa. Over here in Scotland, we know how to grease the wheels. Jay, forget all about that. Because actually, as part of this deal, just to, you know, sweeten the deal, we've given you the Pittsburgh Steelers first-round draft pick.
Oh, whoa. I could go for that. All right, enough horsing around. Let's get this show started.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
I think we're getting better, honestly. I don't think we're who you thought we were back in the day. I think we're much different now. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by the Superfans. It is Thursday. That means it's football day. And of course, we have a trio of Superfans to bring you, plus a great interview a little bit later on in the show. Let me bring in my guy so you know exactly who you're going to be hearing from today. As always, we've got Greg, our Steelers Superfan. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Jay. I'm excited to hear more about Joe Hag today.
Ah, you're going to know all about who Joe Hag is a little bit later as we talk with Eric Galco, who is a part of OptimumScouting.com. He's also the draft guy at Sporting News. So we'll be talking with him a little bit later on. Neil is our Redskins super fan. He's here usually every Thursday. Hello, Neil, our friend from Scotland.
Hey, Jay. Good to hear from you. I'm hoping we're going to be hearing something about these 2012 Redskin legends who are departing.
We got big breaking news in that department, which we'll be getting to just a little bit from now. And James, our Texan superfan, who from time to time shows up on a Thursday. How are you, James?
I'm doing pretty well. The same could be said for my day-to-day job that I occasionally show up. Looking forward to seeing what rules the NFL is going to poorly enforce starting next year.
Oh, and there's quite a few of them to get to. One in particular I've got a problem with. But we want to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen. NextFanUp@gmail.com. That's our email address. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, we're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast or just type in Next Fan Up in the search bar and you'll see us. If you're listening to us on iTunes, hey, leave us a review. It'd be kind of nice. And we have gotten a few reviews here lately. And let me read you one of them because I was very impressed by this particular review that was left for us here by giving. I want to make sure I get the correct screen name right. Yes, Giving Jane wrote good! ! Surprisingly good podcast. Thank you very much, Giving Jane. I agree. We are surprisingly good. I think it's a great description for this show. Please leave more great descriptions, surprisingly good descriptions for us and reviews on iTunes, if you please. What do you say, guys? Should we get into the breaking news here? I think this is a good spot for it. The breaking news is the Browns now have themselves a quarterback. His name is RG3. Neil, how do you feel about RG3?
How do you feel about RG3? I'm delighted that he's found a new home. He deserves that. He deserves another chance. A couple of things stand out to me from the deal with Cleveland. I think, first of all, it shows you how far the guy has fallen over the last couple of years in terms of his contracts. I think 2 years, $15 million, with $6.75 million guaranteed. And if you kind of compare that with somebody like Sam Bradford, another quarterback who's missed considerable playing time through injury, he's sitting with a two-year $35 million contract with $22 million guaranteed. So that's kind of my main takeaway. I hope it works out for him. But you've got to ask yourself, who is he throwing the ball to apart from Gary Barnage?
Never mind who he's throwing it to. Can he even throw the ball? Can he even stay on the field long enough to throw the ball? I mean, those are the biggest questions I have about RG3. I honestly don't feel it's like you got rid of Johnny Football to acquire RG3. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Greg, you got some thoughts on this?
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense because he adds the, what is it now, the 25th name to that jersey. So I'm pretty excited about that. And this is jersey number 25. 26 can't be far behind. So.
Greg is hiding it very well, but I'm sure I can hear fear and trepidation in his voice with the thought of RG3 running onto the field next season. I think you'll be fine, Greg. If you play him later in the season, you'll probably be injured by then. But early in the season, I think you're probably in trouble.
Yeah, I think it was a good move for the Browns overall. But I'm more interested in how it affects the Jets now and stuff like that. I just don't know. Can you even use his deal as a comparison for Fitzpatrick and his deal going forward? I'm not even sure about that. But I think those tremors are more, more important than what is actually going on with the Browns.
You know,
do you guys think the deal is good?
I don't think the deal is good at all. It's one, a little too rich. Two, it's RG3. By the way, former guest of our show, Scott Wright, at Draft Countdown on Twitter, adds, even though the Cleveland Browns signed Robert Griffin III, the move at number two overall should still be North Dakota State quarterback Carson Wentz. I think that's very insightful from Mr. Wright. James, last word here on RG3 to the Browns.
Well, they may just be bringing him in to be a buffer before Carson Wentz gets in there. They lost Alex Mack. Their line is going to be a rebuilding process. So instead of putting, your new rookie out there and having him get hurt behind a bad line, why not put RG3 out there? The upside for the Browns there is they can't say that they wrecked this quarterback because they're bringing him in after, Neil's Redskins have already wrecked him. So they can't take credit for that. I also think it'll end up helping Fitzpatrick because one of the things the Jets did was bring in Robert Griffin III. The deal was paying him like, a former third string quarterback on his own team. Whereas Fitzpatrick is an established starter. He has several winning records and has shown improvement and stability. It would be coming back to a team that, he showed success with last year on the Jets. So I think this helps Fitzpatrick's case in getting his $10-plus million contract from them.
It should help Fitzpatrick overall. There's still the issue of Colin Kaepernick being waved out there in the social media landscape. You keep hearing those whispers. You keep seeing those people type that name. The quarterback situation is going to shake out as it's going to shake out. But I do think this will help Fitzpatrick in the long run. And it should awaken the Jets, who seem to be sleeping at this particular moment. Final say, and we'll give it to the superfan. It's our new Brown superfan, Ben. It's actually an old Brown superfan that we've brought back. He was one of the originals, as a matter of fact. So it's good to have Ben on board representing the Browns, talking about RG3. He mentions most pundits are saying the signing shouldn't change the Browns draft plans, as we've already mentioned. However, this Browns team has yet to prove to do the right thing when it comes to the quarterback. Whether it's signing Delhomme, Dilfer, Garcia, Jason Campbell, Seneca Wallace, and Brian Hoyer, and ignoring the quarterback spot early in the draft, they've always been the team looking for the Band-Aid fix at the quarterback spot, and it has yet to work for them. I'm hopeful they do the right thing and take Goff Wentz at the number two spot, but history shows they don't do that. And with one of the impatient, inept owners in all of sports, I'm concerned. So there you go. He does add signing RG3 in a vacuum. Sure, why not? Low risk, high upside. In reality, not a big fan. So that is the Browns' perspective on the RG3 signing. We're going to get to some more news items coming up, but we want to bring in our very special guest at this particular moment, because honestly, he's got some good thoughts and he does talk about the Browns in this interview. So let's bring him in right now. All right, it's my pleasure now to bring in our very special guest. As you know, we're getting ready for the Superfan Super Mock Draft. And to get all the information that we can to our superfans, but also to you, who are fans of your favorite team, we're bringing in different draft experts each and every week here on the podcast. And this week, I'm excited to bring in the guy who's in charge of all the draft news at Sporting News. He's the director of scouting at OptimumScouting.com. It's Eric Gelko. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's prime draft season right now, so I'm excited to be a part of it.
We're excited to have you because there's so much to really jump into with this year's draft. And, you know, the one thing that I keep hearing over and over again is it's a deep draft. What the heck does that even mean, Eric? I mean, does it mean I'm going to get first round talent in the third or fourth rounds, or does it mean I'm going to get third round talent in every round?
Yeah, I think it's in some ways the deep draft. And what that means is that you can get guys who are, you know, first, second, third round grades past those areas. And this defensive tackle class, for example, though it's not a sexy position to be a deep part, is the deepest part in this class because there's about 9, 10, 11 guys who are worth top two round picks, and they're going to go late in that area as well. So being a deep draft at some positions is you're getting value for those guys. And I think the smart NFL teams, which the Giants have been good at in the past, the Patriots especially, with a deep draft at certain positions, those teams take those positions regardless of need. So in this class, you have defensive tackle that's deep. I think you have mid-round quarterback that's deep. You have a handful of cornerbacks in the first, second round that are really impressive. Offensive tackles, those spots, I think the smart teams will take those guys regardless of need because it's a deep class in that area. So while it's weak in some areas, the smart teams will take the deep class guys and get those guys for great values early on.
So, Eric, I was looking over your small school list. Out of North Dakota State, I saw the left tackle you have there, a third-round grade. He had ranked as the seventh best tackle. I had never heard of him before, Joe Hag. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Carson Wentz gets all the attention North Dakota State and at the pro day, which is going on, is you know, Wentz is the future attraction. But Hag's a guy that teams, I think, are considering as maybe a plug-and-play left tackle, played there for the last 3 years, protecting Carson Wentz's blind side, but a guy who I think teams can look at guard as well. So I think he's a very refined footwork guy. I think he mirrors very well. He can get upfield and really dominate with his initial punch. Not a great athlete, not a great bend guy. I think he's better suited for quick pass protection, downfield run blocking, and being more of a mauling man blocking guy than a zone guy. But I think what he can do, and he's been the catalyst of a great rushing offense for North Dakota State the last 3 years. I think what he can do is be a plug and play starter at maybe left tackle, probably more likely left guard, maybe play the right side at some point because he has some experience there in high school. But I think Joe Hag is one of the safer offensive tackles. And I mentioned earlier, this offensive tackle class is really one of the better we've seen in the last couple of years, especially in the first two rounds. I think once you get past the top offensive tackles and left tackles like Ronnie Stanley, Laremy Tunsil, Taylor Decker, Jermaine Nfeti, Jack Conklin, get past those guys looking for a capable maybe tackle, probably guard prospect. I think Hague's one of the top guys up there.
Eric, before I ask my first question, I just wanted to thank you. I really enjoyed spending some time looking at the website, at your rankings, the whole thing. Love your mock draft, and I like the way it's really different from maybe the mainstream sort of draft information that you can pick up. I think I've probably been quite remiss in not looking at this over the years, so thanks for that. My first question would be around Tavon Young, cornerback from Temple. He's somebody who doesn't appear in many mock drafts that I've seen and is certainly ahead of some of the more well-known faces there in the cornerback class. You also have a high ranking on him at 8.5. Tell me about him.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite cornerbacks in this class, and not only because he's a guy who's played well on film, but tested very well at the NFL Combine. He's a guy who also impressed at his pro day, which I was at Temple University a couple weeks back. He's a 5'9 cornerback. He played very well against Will Fuller in Notre Dame this year. That's kind of his staple game on his record and scouting report because he played well against a potential first-round receiver, Will Fuller, dominating them downfield, playing physical despite his smaller size, finishing at the catch point. And then looking for cornerbacks who are undersized, you need guys who can time their jumps very well and handle those big receivers despite not having the length you want. So for a 5'9 cornerback and at least two or three teams, generally shy away from cornerbacks under 5'10", 5'11". I said, you know what, Tavon Young's on our board because we think he's that type of player who's a physical well jumping, well timed jump, you know, cornerback to kind of play in the perimeter, play inside in the slot, and do a lot of things that undersized cornerbacks have to do. So the comparison I kind of have, and maybe it's a bit lofty and maybe recency bias starting that, but Malcolm Butler is a guy I come up with who's an undersized cornerback who is supposed to be nothing more than a number three, number four cornerback, has emerged as one of the better young cornerbacks in football. I think Tavon can do that because he's feisty. He's willing to get physical in contact down the field, underneath, finish as a run blocker, as a run defender, and get down the field and finish as a pass catcher as well in coverage. So I think Tavon Young is one of my favorite players in this draft class because he can do so much despite being a size guy. I think he's worth a second-round pick. I think he'll go someplace, if not the second round, early third round. But I know a lot of teams, like I said, who don't take undersized cornerbacks who are making the exception for Tavon Young.
You know, I'm glad Neil brought up the website OptimumScouting.com and specifically about the mock draft, because we've been noticing as we've been doing our Twitter polls with our fans as to what they'd like to see their teams pick. There seems to be a consensus among the top 10 in this draft. Are you seeing that? Do you think there's a reason behind that?
Yeah, I do. And I think that the main reason is because there are really five or six, depending on which team you ask, elite talent from this class. And there's Laramie Tunsil, offensive tackle from Ole Miss, Jalen Ramsey of Florida State, Joey Bosa of Ohio State, DeForest Buckner of Oregon, Miles Jack of UCLA, and Ezekiel of Ohio State. I think almost every NFL team, regardless of their scheme, understands that these six guys are really special talent, and especially those first five outside of Ezekiel Elliott. I think those guys in the same class as past prospects, depending on which team you ask, of Adrian Peterson, Calvin Johnson, Joe Thomas, Jadeveon Clowney, Khalil Mack of years past, they're that type of prospects, and we're lucky to have the many guys in this class that can be elite players. So that's one of the big reasons that in the Cleveland Browns, the 49ers, teams that need quarterbacks should maybe pass on those guys, because we have offensive, defensive changing players in this draft class available in the top six that you don't get most years. That's why we see so much consensus. So I think you have those six, seven players. You have the two quarterbacks teams want to look at as well, maybe receiver in there. And that kind of makes up most people's top 10. But I think it's a strong class at top of this board. And like I said, you don't see many draft classes with six elite talents in it. You see maybe one, two. If we get three in here, that's great. This class has five or six really elite talents that teams have varying degrees of which player is the top player on their board among those five guys, because that's special of a draft class.
Eric, well, this is Greg again. My second question for you is, for all the fantasy football owners out there, I noticed how high you had Braxton Miller. I see him that he's your second-rated wide receiver and a top 10, or top 15 talent in this draft. Can you explain what you're thinking here? Because I think this ranking is a little bit higher than the rest of the media has him.
Yeah, and the big reason for that is that I've talked to people at a lot of people at Ohio State, because obviously they have a lot of players there, and also kind of get a feel for how Braxton Miller fit in that offense. And from a fantasy perspective, I'm not sure I'd spend an early draft pick on him, because I think he's going to need some time to develop in the NFL. But if there's a receiver that I want to assume is going to be a long-term NFL starter in this draft class and bank on that, and rest my case on that if I'm an NFL front office, it's Braxton Miller. And speaking with him, speaking with Ohio State coaches, speaking with Ohio State teammates, they have the utmost respect for this guy. He's the consummate professional. I think in just a year's time, he's going to be a Randall Cobb-like player for some NFL offense. So while he's not going to be going in the first round, most likely, maybe the late first round, there's a potential based on where those receivers go early on. There's a chance, I think, more likely a second or third round player. But in this draft class, if there's a receiver on bank, it's Braxton Miller, because of how quickly he's adjusted to the position. You look back, he was only decided to play receiver back in last March, and he quickly became, in his first game at Ohio State as a receiver against Virginia Tech, had a fantastic game, and they didn't really use a lot of him or a lot of the weapons consistently all year long, but he grew as a receiver consistently throughout the season. Then the Senior Bowl comes around, he's probably the best receiver in Mobile, Alabama, at his 5th position for just 9 months. So all the signs point to Braxton Miller being a fast-developing player. I think early on in the NFL, he'll be a slot guy, he'll be more of a gadget guy, used on reverses, kind of how Tavon Austin was used as a rookie, which is a bit frustrating, but long-term, I think he has a much higher ceiling than Tavon Austin. I think he's going to be a Randall Cobb-type player for a long time in the league. So fantasy-wise, I wouldn't take him. Maybe I'd rather Corey Coleman, Josh Doctson, certainly Laquan Treadwell, depending on where those guys land. But long-term, if I'm resting my case as an NFL GM or a director of scouting on a guy who I think is going to be a long-term NFL starter, I'll look at Braxton Miller as my guy.
Eric, we're Washington are looking for a center in this draft, I believe. And looking through your rankings, you have Nick Martin ranked over one of my favorite players, Ryan Kelly. And then on top of that, you've got Cody Whitehair ranked even higher. I know he's a guard, but he's ranked even higher. I had Kelly down as the number one interior guy. Tell me why Nick Martin would be a better pick for Washington than Ryan Kelly.
Yeah, I think overall it's a really strong center class, which again, like defensive tackle, is not necessarily a sexy answer for what's the best area in this draft class, but it's a strong center class. Now we have a lot of guys who have a lot of experience, even guys like Matt Skura of Duke have 3 year starting experience, and I think a lot of these guys can play center in the NFL right away. So again, I think teams who maybe need a center, kind of need a center, are going to take one of this draft class because there's so many good ones. But I think Nick Martin, certainly Zach Martin's brother of Notre Dame, who was up for rookie of the year as a guard, for the Dallas Cowboys 2 years ago. So I think it's indictment of how well he played for Dallas. I think teams feel that Nick Martin is kind of a lesser version of him in some respects. Not a little bit less of an athlete, even though Zach wasn't a great athlete, a guy who's not as dominant with his hands and finishing downfield. But I think Nick Martin could be a very capable starting center, a guy who has experience there for a long time, has played guard in his career. That versatility certainly helps. I think Kelly is a bit limited athletically. He's kind of a try-hard, work-hard type center. A guy teams want in their locker room and leading the way. I think he's a bit underappreciated in Derrick Henry's success, but not quite the guy I think is going to be a Hall of Fame, you know, all-pro type center like you want in a first-round center. Not sure Nick Martin is either. I think all these guys are worth second, third-round players, but I think Nick Martin's a guy you can trust to be a little more versatile, to make an immediate impact athletically and lengthwise in the NFL at center, and could play guard if worse comes to worse.
Last question here for you, Eric, and that's, you know, I know they call it a surprise because it's something that happens that's unexpected, but I'm curious to know, to what you think might be the surprise pick of this year's draft.
Yeah, I think the main one I'm hearing a lot about is Darren Lee of Ohio State. He's a linebacker. He tested tremendously at the NFL Combine. I think ran a 4.49 on either ham or electronic time as a linebacker, the fastest Ohio State player there. I've been told the top 10, even top 15, or top 15 is probably likely for his go, maybe even top 10. Despite not being a guy who's producing a lot at Ohio State level, a guy who was kind of overshadowed by a lot of their talent at Ohio State, but teams are very excited by him. Don't be surprised if he's kind of the next guy after those 6 week guys I mentioned, if the 49ers or the Eagles or the Giants take like Darren Lee, who didn't produce well in college necessarily, has a lot of holes in his game, but is a tremendous athlete. I think he could be the first big surprise on draft day. But and to talk with more and more teams, there's a lot of interest in that first overall spot taking Jared Goff. I was talking to two different teams just the other day about, you know, is there a chance these quarterbacks go 1 and 2 overall? Because some people believe these quarterbacks might fall on draft day, but I think for the most part, I've heard that there's a real chance a team trades up even above the Browns or definitely above the 49ers to get Jared Goff. I'm not sure which one yet. The Eagles, the Rams both have a lot of interest as well. The Bears too. We'll see if a team does it. But I think that the number one overall pick is certainly up for grabs right now and talking to teams, and we'll see if that kind of comes to fruition on draft day.
Eric, I have one final question, and it's probably a question that maybe even can't be answered on this podcast, maybe 2 or 3 podcasts. I'm always interested in how the depth of scouting and looking into the backgrounds of players, we still every year seem to come to your Bradys or your Montanas who fall and fall and fall, or else you have players like Trent Richardson or Aaron Maben or Deion Jordan who just go so high and then totally bust. And I wonder in the future, or even in the near future, what's going to change in the scouting community to try and make their rankings even better so that we don't end up with these players?
Yeah, I think it's always going to happen. I mean, there's always a human element to drafting, and a big part of the reason that happens sometimes is that key NFL decision makers aren't watching film in season. They're focused on their team season, getting to the playoffs, winning the Super Bowl, things like that. They don't really focus on college stuff until later in the process, and even then, head coaches, GMs, director of player personnel aren't going out and watching these guys live. And when it comes to the live portion of stuff, whether it's the Senior Bowl, more likely the NFL Combine or their pro days, it's that first live reaction that gets guys to kind of fall in love with players rationally or irrationally. That's why quarterbacks go generally high. That's why you see some players go surprisingly high because a GM or, like I said, a decision maker is at their pro day. So I think in the future we'll see more and more teams put more faith in their scouting department. But I think more intriguingly, myself and other NFL teams I've spoken with are curious optimistically of what the Cleveland Browns are doing, because they haven't quite figured out yet what their plan is in terms of the scouting department and the process. But the Browns are going to use a lot of the past data we've seen and how teams build rosters and focus their draft attention that way. So I won't see the true value of the Browns change to analytics until probably the 2017 offseason of free agency and the NFL draft. But teams keep a close eye on it because it's kind of bucking the trend of how teams are going to look at the draft process, what positions to evaluate, what positions to draft early, and how to really determine which guys are going to work and which guys aren't, aside from just the eye test. So I think all eyes are focused on the Cleveland Browns. If they can do this right, that can really change football for the better and kind of prevent these busts and prevent teams from making mistakes on draft day. So all eyes on the Cleveland Browns to kind of change the NFL culture, which maybe isn't the greatest team and the greatest staple to do so.
Well, the super fans and I will be talking about the Browns a little bit later on and exactly what they were thinking with signing RG3. It's not a good sign in that direction there, Eric. But this has been phenomenal. Tell people where they can find you, where they can get their hands on that 2016 draft guide.
Yeah, you can find me on social media, on Twitter at Optimum Scouting. Optimum Scouting's website, all my work. I'm the lead NFL draft guy at Sporting News. You can find my work there. All my mock drafts, some of our smaller scouting reports will be on there as well. For NFL draft guide, again, it's as many scouting reports as you'll need for the draft process. We've got analytics studies. We've got endorsements from NFL executives. We've got small school big boards, overall big boards. A lot of great gifts from NFL teams, which is always great to hear. So it's on OptimumScouting.com. Top of the page is a place to purchase. You get your purchase, you get within 24 hours a PDF copy. So we're excited about it. And guys, thanks for coming on here, promote a little bit, and talk draft with you guys.
Thank you, Eric. Hope to hear from you again down the road.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
So there goes Eric Galco. Great interview. James, you were surprisingly quiet during that interview. What happened?
Well, you know, I'm just sitting out of my car at a customer site, so I had to act like I was working.
Pulling the curtain, I put James on the spot there. James was not participating in that interview because we did it before the show started. But in any case, that's Eric Galco. Go get that draft guide. As Neil and I mentioned, and Greg has seen it as well, it's fantastic. And you can't beat it. All right. More news on the NFL front. Alfred Morris ends up signing with the Cowboys. What I find interesting about this signing, Neil, once again, is that he ends up going from one spot where he obviously had lost the lead back job to another spot where the owner slash GM has said he's not going to be the lead back.
Yeah, I think give it time. A few weeks into the season, I think he will be the lead back. But Jay, this actually really hurts. Morris was a terrific player for Washington, had a couple of Pro Bowl seasons, sixth-round draft pick. What more could you want? Sadly, his play has declined through various niggling injuries and probably more importantly, a change of system. But, oh, God, you kind of want to wish the guy well and say, you know, go and find a new career with another team. But why? Why the Cowboys? It almost... Well, I think one of your drops used to be makes me want to puke. And somebody else say something.
We couldn't do diddly poo.
That's the best I could give you out of the new drops that I have. You know, James, what do you think here? Alf in Dallas.
Well, I mean, they're still using... I mean, who is their starting running back now? I mean, they got rid of Joseph Randall in the middle of last year. They still have a relatively good offensive line. And what Alfred Morris brings is he's an underrated pass catching back, which should help take a lot of the pressure off of Tony Romo. One thing that DeMarco Murray did very well down in Dallas was he came out of the backfield and caught some passes. And, you know, it's a depth move. It's not like they went out and paid Lamar Miller or Matt Forte money for him. So I think it's a good, you know, bargain move. And Alfred Morris definitely has the talent to exceed that contract and play his way up to the starting role.
Jerry Jones has said that Darren McFadden remains the starter for the Cowboys, but I agree with what you just said. And I think Greg might agree as well. This actually could be a very smart move by the Dallas Cowboys, Greg.
Well, I think it's a great move. And they're bargain hunters. I mean, Chris Ivory is like 3 years older or whatever he is. He got $6 million a year, and Alfred Morris barely got two. I mean, it's just great. And I kind of disagree with his declining play. I mean, I watch this guy a lot because he's on my fantasy team, of course, but he's been the focal point of my team for a couple of years. And I think the rest of the team is letting down. I think he's got a lot of juice left. I think a new change of scenery, a new town is going to do him great. I'm hoping for 1,600 yards.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues with Morris was that in his early couple of seasons, when he got hit, he still went forward and got 3 or 4 yards. He bounced off tackles. Last season, and certainly probably the latter half of the previous season, when he got hit, he stayed hit.
All right, moving on now to more NFL news. The Rams seem to be making some shockwaves, or they're at least in the news headlines today, mainly because they have been selected for the television show Hard Knocks here in 2016. Oh, what a surprise. The NFL putting the team moving to the market that they most coveted, the number two television market, by the way, on Hard Knocks to promote the team. Not a surprise here at all, is it, Greg?
No, I don't think it is. And I'm now just waiting with bated breath for Johnny Football to come to town with Tebow. So we have a battle of quarterback versus good versus evil. So, I mean, that would be amazing television. I mean, otherwise, Hard Knocks, whatever.
I would like to see the, let's see, how can we name them? The Kylo Football versus, what was her name? Ray. I can't even do it. I can't make the joke. Sorry, I attempted it. Wow, that was really bad. Neil, what are your thoughts here? Rams on Hard Knocks.
Well, Hard Knocks is something we do get. It is inflicted upon us over here. I think the Rams are in trouble already. They have a 7-9 coach. They're going to be on Hard Knocks, so we're going to see all the good and all the ugly bits, probably more ugly bits than good bits. And they don't have a quarterback. I mean, who cares? The Rams.
Well, I think what's more interesting about the Rams being on Hard Knocks in 2016 is how they were not on Hard Knocks in the year 2014. And there's now a report that's being circulated, that the report comes from Howard Balzer, that the league made a deal with the Rams to draft Michael Sam back in 2014. You'll remember Michael Sam as being one of the first openly gay players in the National Football League. Apparently happened mainly because the league went to the Rams and said, if you draft Michael Sam, you do not have to appear on Hard Knocks, which is, first of all, an interesting deal, because you would think the Michael Sam story would be something that you'd absolutely want featured on Hard Knocks. Or maybe considering the team and the head coach, you don't want the openly gay player to be featured on Hard Knocks because he's probably going to undergo some hard knocks. James?
Yeah, so when they drafted Michael Sam, Oprah actually, or her television network, also went to the Rams wanting to do a special on Michael Sam, and the Rams nixed that. I think they were definitely trying to keep a lower profile in the league and in the city of St. Louis, because at that point in 2014, they were on bad terms with the city of St. Louis. They are already looking to get out and, you know, move to LA. And so I think they just wanted fewer eyeballs on them so that if something were to come out, they could still say that they were negotiating in good faith with the city of St. Louis. I mean, I'm glad we're talking about a conspiracy theory that doesn't have Deflategate as part of it.
We're getting there though.
in the end, it wouldn't shock me if there are these little handshake agreements in the NFL. Again, they're 32 billionaires multimillionaires that want to project the image of the NFL in a positive light. And so if they can say, oh yeah, we're inclusive to homosexuals, we're inclusive to all walks of life by drafting a player and trying to expand their market into another demographic, it would not shock me for the commissioner to make a phone call to somebody and say, hey, why don't you do this? You know, take the hit for the NFL for this year, and then in the end, we'll all be better for it. Michael Sam was a player at the University of Missouri, so he also had a nice hometown connection right there too. So it made a lot more sense for the Rams to get him as opposed to calling over to like the Dallas Cowboys or some other team.
Jared, who's our Rams super fan, is sort of reacting to a lot of the conversation on Slack right now. It's mostly around, the number of teams that have been in different markets. But he's talking about, he is in LA. So he's happy, obviously. The Rams are moving a little bit closer to him. But he mentions here he was in LA on Sunday, drove by the stadium site in Inglewood. huge plot of land in a somewhat rough neighborhood, but I think the area will get revitalized with the stadium and surrounding businesses that are going to be built. Oh boy. It is a great location. I see why they're going to build the stadium down into the ground with how close it is to LAX. Now that's the other interesting point here. As I've attended a Mets game, not recently, it was a couple of years ago, but noticed the airplanes flying directly over the stadium as it's pretty close to, I think it's JFK. Could be wrong. Might be LaGuardia. I don't know. I hate New York. But my point is why is all this land so available around airports? And why do they think that building a stadium is going to improve the surrounding neighborhood? It's not. It's, oh boy, the growing pains that that area is going to go through is unfathomable. Greg?
Yeah. Kind of going back to the Hard Knocks thing, because I'm not a real estate expert, but I think, wasn't Greg Williams their defensive coordinator too with Michael Sam when he was there? Wouldn't that have been like awful?
Yeah,
on television?
He was.
I mean, he doesn't come off as like politically correct or anything, the Bounty Gate guy. So
yeah, that is all very true. All right, that's a lot of talk about a team that loses a bunch of games.
I think it's clear with all this underhand and rather unsavory business with the Rams and the league and the coercion going on, clearly the only alternative to make things better, I think, for the whole league is probably to give the Patriots the first-round pick back.
Oh, you know, Neil, I'm glad you reminded me that that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this story in the first place is, you know, the shady underhandedness of the NFL making deals behind the scenes. Oh, no, the NFL doesn't do any of that. Not at all. No. And if they claim that a certain team let the air out of balls, you know, but they were completely wrong about it, they wouldn't dare admit that they were wrong about it. No, no. Why in the world would they ever do anything like that? Just saying.
Well, Jay, it's clear that the NFL wants to be the biggest sports market in the world right now. And, you know, the biggest sports market is what we call soccer, what Neil calls football. And who better to emulate than FIFA?
Yes. Well done.
That's
well
the
done.
Role model you want, yeah.
All right. We've got some new super fans, but we're missing one team in particular, and that's the Tennessee Titans. So, ladies and gentlemen, we did this last year. We're going to do it again. Until further notice, I bring in Zach Skywalker, our unofficial Titans.
Like Zach Skywalker.
How dare you? I bring in Zach Soderberg, my son, to be the acting Titan superfan. What do you got there from Bleacher Report, Zach Soderberg?
Titans visit with tight end prospects Hooper and Anderson.
Oh, that's interesting. They're looking at tight end. Okay.
Chip Kelly praises outstanding Marcus Mariota.
Of course. He loves him.
Titans ownership situation still a mess.
Oh, that's actually kind of interesting. I might have to go to Bleacher Report later on and read that article.
Titans had a couple of convos about trading number one pick.
All right, you're good. And yes, that is something that Eric brought up during his interview with us. So if you want to be the Titan superfan and replace the Bleacher Report team stream being read by my 12-year-old son, sign up now at nextfanup@gmail.com. All right, so there you go, Titans fans. Your marching orders have been set. But teams that don't no longer have to worry about my son filling in using the Bleacher Report team stream option are the Buffalo Bills, who now get to introduce themselves to Robert. Robert emailed in to nextfanup@gmail.com with his list of things he would do if he was the Buffalo Bills GM. He mentions here, I would continue the process of mining for cheap free agents that fit the defensive system ran by Rex Ryan. Bills only have about $3 million to spend on free agency left after you factor in money for draft choices. That being said, they can still sign a couple of players to minimum contracts like they recently did with tight end Dre and safety Blanton. Both guys fill roles and will be cheap on the books. I'll be looking for veteran help at wide receiver, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, and kicker. That sounds like almost your entire team, Robert. But anyways, that's only a portion of some of the things that he would do. We'll post more of his off-season to-do list on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. We'll have his Bills to-do list posted there. That means I have work for myself to do. What am I doing? Giving myself more work. Next up, the Cardinals no longer need to worry about filling the role of Cardinal superfan, as Brian is now taking over that position. He emailed in his bullet points. Greg, here's something you might like. He's currently living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So he's in your same state. He lived in Phoenix from 1980 to 1996 when he joined the Army. He's 38 years old, so he's not quite a man. He's not 40. His parents had season tickets from the beginning through the mid-90s. He's an avid member of the Cardinals board on ArizonaSportsFans.com, a 14-year member with over 12,000 posts. So I expect Brian will be very active in our Slack group. He is a Sunday ticket subscriber. He hasn't missed a snap since 2002. His wedding only caused him to miss two games. Honestly, Brian, that's two games too many. What was I thinking allowing you to become the Cardinals superfan? No. I think he'll be a fine addition to our group. And lastly, we have a new Lions superfan. His name is Will, and he writes in that he's been a Lions fan dating back to his years in Flint, Michigan, where he attended elementary school. He may be living in Southern California now, but still does every bit of news on the players and front office thanks to the wonders of modern media. His schedule allows him to be flexible to appear on the podcast despite the time differences, which is always a bonus when applying to be a super fan on this particular podcast. So, Will, congratulations. By the way, I also know Will as his sons played against my son in the annual fantasy football league that my boy does every year. So, congratulations, Will. It's good to have you step in for the Lions. As we mentioned, only the Titans position remains. Why wouldn't a fan from the Titans step up for this role, gentlemen? What is wrong with the Tennessee Titans?
Well, they drafted number one two years in a row.
Are we sure the Titans actually exist? I'm not quite sure.
These are.
I just thought they were really impressed that they weren't getting Peyton Manning as their head coach.
These are all very good questions. All very good questions. Speaking of head coaches, the New Orleans Saints don't need to worry about one, as they are keeping Sean Payton, signed him to a long, very expensive extension. I think it's the only move they could make. I've mentioned numerous times on this podcast how I don't feel there's any other team in the league that is more connected. The community of that team is more connected to the team and to the coach and to the player in Drew Brees than in New Orleans. And I know that there's a few of you on here that would disagree with me, and Greg, you might be one of them.
Well, I actually don't disagree. I think it might be a tie with team and city between Pittsburgh and the Saints. But no one, you know, they've kind of conditioned us over the years not to love any single player because they just cut them whenever they get old. But with Brees, I heard they were talking about an extension with him too. So, I mean, I 100% agree. They have some sort of a uniquely special relationship there.
I'm just not a fan of Sean Payton. He rubs me up the wrong way. He must have the largest ego in the NFL, the way he promotes himself every offseason, pretending he's got a new job offer. He's one of those guys, you know, he's got a face I would never tire of slapping.
By the way, in terms of large egos amongst NFL head coaches, I have a feeling my head coach is got a larger one than Sean Payton.
You could get a comment on that, Todd, but he would just push the recorder away or the microphone away from you.
our our Saints, our new Saints fan, Stefanko, is that what he's deciding he wants to go by? I guess so. He wrote in to us to let us know what his thoughts were on the Peyton extension. Money is huge for coming off two losing seasons, but if we have a chance at making a run in the playoffs, it has to be with him. He and Breeze hide a lot of the issues on this team. Those two basically won us seven games this year with the worst pass defense in NFL history. With that said, I like it, you know, and the other thing is Sean Payton comes from that Bill Parcells coaching tree. Where, you know, some of that ego probably rubbed off, James.
Yeah, the I mean, the move makes all the sense in the world. As you already mentioned, they're going to have to extend Breeze next. I mean, he counts $30 million against the cap. He is 37, but with a 5-year extension for Peyton, you could easily see Breeze getting a 3-year extension just to soften that cap hit now. What would be interesting is in years like 4 and 5, if the Saints go over to the Cowboys, because by then Jason Garrett will probably have worn out his welcome, and try and get a high draft pick for in exchange for Peyton.
Ah, yes, we have new rules, ladies and gentlemen. We don't necessarily know what a catch is, but we do have new rules. As we mentioned at the end of last week that there were a bunch of proposals, here are the approved proposals that went through. So, line of scrimmage for try kicks, extra points, is now permanently moved to the 15-yard line. I think we all agree that that was a pretty decent rule. It does add a little bit more excitement. I don't like it when my kicker, who's the most accurate kicker in NFL history, misses an extra point in a very important playoff game, but it is what it is. So the extra points moved back to the 15. One thing that I did think was interesting about this, I saw this on the NFL Network, and I will ask you real quick here, James. Do you think this will make kickers more valuable, especially going into the draft?
I don't really think it'll change the kicker value that much. I mean, you're still going to get the majority of your worth out of your kicker from making long field goals to win the game. Yeah, it'll be nice if you know you're going to hit all of your extra points, but the decline in kickers or the rate that they missed kicks was basically in line with what you would expect if you took all the extra points and you made them, you know, 27-yard field goals instead. So, no, I don't really think it'll drive the market for kickers any more than it has.
Well, maybe this rule will help change your mind, because also related to kickers, the spot of a touchback has now been moved to the 25-yard line instead of the 20-yard line. This is a 1-year-only experiment. This is obviously being done to eliminate what many have said is the most dangerous play in football, and that is the kickoff return. This certainly eliminates the value of someone like a Devin Hester, who is a kickoff return specialist, but perhaps drives up the value for kickers. What do you think about that, Neil?
Well, I wonder if, because they've got an extra 5 yards now, the kickers will be kicking the ball as high as they can and trying to just drop it into that within the 25-yard line, and maybe we'll see more mass pileups, and we might not see the speed of the play, but we may see a lot of hitting in there as they have a slightly larger drop zone, if you like.
You know, that is an interesting thought. The other thing is, do you have to kick the ball off the tee on the free kick, or can you punt it? Because I would wonder if you'd want your punter maybe to go out there and do the free kick. If that was going to be your strategy, try and drop it within the 25-yard line. Well, I guess we'll see. It's a 1-year experiment.
Taking out to the 25-yard line, they say it's in the name of player safety. I actually think it's in the name of driving up offense. If you look at expected points, which goes off of all of the drives, you know, 5 yards doesn't seem like a lot, but it's worth an extra 0.1 to 0.25 per drive. And so, you know, that also doesn't sound like a lot, but that would work out to over 500 points scored in the NFL over the course of a season. So the NFL really gets a lot of their marketing, a lot of their money from the fantasy sports connection, and fantasy players really love, you know, higher scoring games, more points. I wonder if this is just a way for them to drive that up a little bit more.
That's a very good point. We'll have to see. All chop blocks are now illegal. We thought they already were, but now it's definitely written in stone. the offensive and defensive play callers on the coaching staffs will now be able to use the coach-to-player communication system, regardless of whether they're on the field or in the coach's booth. The competition committee also approved that a player who is penalized twice in one game for certain types of unsportsmanlike conduct fouls, that has been passed. That is a one-year experiment. Also, a lot of coaches are already talking about the concern that there will be some teams that will use this to their advantage in some manner of fashion. And I can definitely see a certain evil genius who resides somewhere in the Northeast going, you know what? Unsportsmanlike conduct foul yet. Let's go ahead and run that out there now, because if we don't, we're definitely going to lose this game. It might be a little bit of a stretch,
I wonder if it might lead to more simulation by players. Let's say somebody's lining up against a cornerback. Who should we go with? Talib. And who's already had one unsportsmanlike conduct foul, and then you get, I think you call it slopping over there in basketball, is that correct? Might be a bit more of that sort of play to try and get that second foul.
I think this rule is totally needless. What's stopping the refs right now from throwing a guy out at the snap of the, you know, the very first snap of the game if they think he's trying to hurt somebody or be dangerous? I mean, are they just, is this just one of these stupid rules that's coming in the refs' butts again? Like, what does it really do? I mean, he's going to throw James Harrison out in the fourth quarter of some random game because he has two vicious hits on the quarterback or something. Versus, you know, poking a guy's eye. Like, that didn't stop anyone from getting tossed last year. So, worthless.
Well, I mean, only for unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. It's not necessarily for personal fouls, which is, you know, kind of a concession on the league's part. Looking back, this only would have impacted two players last year. But it would be interesting if there was like a really vicious hit and there'd be an appeal because, well, he didn't have a previous unsportsmanlike conduct penalty and you threw him out after his first. So, I mean, you're going to have some unintended consequences here, like with every rule.
Well, and as you mentioned, unsportsmanlike conduct goes towards taunting. So spinning the ball after a first down, that's unsportsmanlike conduct. And obviously there's always the situation where the ref, you see it in every game, the ref only sees the reaction, never sees the actual person initially. So when you end up reacting to that guy who, you know, chop blocked you, that the ref missed it, and you throw that punch, you're the one that gets flagged, not the other guy. I think there's a lot of problems with this rule. And I think it's an overreaction to things that happened in very public games last year. And as you mentioned, the unintended consequences. It's a good thing this is only 1 year, because I think Patrick actually mentioned this in the last podcast. The ref should just throw out the guy when he feels like he needs to throw out the guy. You don't need to put a limit at, you know, two unsportsmanlike conduct fouls.
This might be a good spot where the replay official could get involved, because to your point, if they're only going to get the people that are reacting, you know, why not have the replay official be able to buzz down to the referee and say, you know, after that, you know, after a scrum or a melee out on the field, you know, these two players should be ejected.
And to that degree, the competition committee decided to table expanding reviewable plays for further discussion. The horse collar rule has been expanded so that whenever a defender grabs the jersey at the nameplate or above and pulls the runner towards the ground, that will now be considered a horse collar tackle, which is illegal. There will be a foul for delay of game when a team attempts to call a timeout when it is not permitted to do so. And they have also eliminated the 5-yard penalty for an eligible receiver illegally touching a forward pass after being out of bounds and reestablishing himself in bounds, and will only be a loss of down when that particular situation occurs. And also the rule has been eliminated. Multiple spots of enforcement for a double foul after a change of possession. I don't even necessarily understand what that means, but it's been eliminated, so we don't need to understand what it means. All right, anything else on the docket?
I'm looking forward to the March Madness bracket of the biggest egos in the NFL go head-to-head, because I think there's no shortage there.
As long as we don't do biggest egos amongst the super fans, because I think Patrick is going to win that battle hands down. I don't even think it's a competition. We'll see. You can email us nextfanup@gmail.com, especially if you're a Titans fan. We want you on this podcast. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. I hope you're watching that, because Greg has done a great job with the Twitter draft, getting some ideas before we get into the Superfan Super Mock Draft, which I know our super fans are very anxious to get started, but it's tough to get that started without a Titans fan. But Greg, I know you've been running the Twitter polls. How's that been working so far?
It's been working pretty well. We've been suggestions from the super fan that's on the clock. He gives me his top four players and we put them out there. And only the Raiders gave me grief about the selection of players. So I'm pretty happy with it. But I like more people to vote. The more you retweet it and vote when you see it out there.
There you go. At NFU Podcast, you'll see our Twitter polls for the mock draft that we're running right now. And of course, Facebook.com, you can check out all the off-season to-do lists, some of which I'm sure need to be updated. Others, like I mentioned, the Bills superfan will have his off-season to-do list up there, so you can check out some of the thoughts that he has for the Buffalo Bills. As I've mentioned numerous times before, Bills Mafia is lame. You guys suck. You don't exist. And so as I get more fans angry at me, I think it's time for me to close my mic and let Jeff Fisher close it out, as we always do. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.